This is Brian Lehr's Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Thursday, December 3rd. I'm Bridget Bergen, WNYC's City Hall and Politics reporter, filling in for Brian today. With Mitch McConnell still balking, the Democratic leadership in the House and Senate has come out in support of a bipartisan COVID stimulus bill put together by moderate Republicans and centrist Democrats in the Senate. It totals less than half of the HEROES bill passed by the House, but still includes some of its key components, including extended unemployment benefits and aid to state and local governments. With some benefits from the last bill already expired and the rest running out at the end of the year, will the expressed bipartisan support be enough to gain White House and Senate leadership support? To talk about this and other issues, I'm joined now by Congressman Adriano Espaillat, whose district covers Upper Manhattan and parts of the West Bronx. Congressman Espaillat, good morning and welcome back to the show.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for having me once again.
Congressman, just yesterday, you wrote an op-ed in the Daily News calling for the Senate to pass the HEROES Act, the stimulus bill passed by the House 2 months ago. The spending in the bill totaled something like $2.2 trillion, while this one totals $908 billion. Some of that money is allocated but not yet spent. What's your reaction to the bill?
Well, first and foremost, you know, we passed the HEROES Act many months ago. And the HEROES Act was, for the first time, the view and the vision of the House of Representatives of how should we move forward. The CARES Act and other legislation that we have previously agreed on to address the pandemic really was the Senate's vision. And it got passed down to the House, and we reached an agreement with them. But this was the first time that we put forward our vision, and we had a very ambitious vision, as we should, for the American people. And we said it was $3 trillion. Having said that, we recognized that it was going to be difficult to pass that. And we went ahead and we tried to build consensus that we lowered the figure to 2.2, 2.3. And again, the Senate nor the White House agreed to pass or take up that legislation, which is in dire need for the American people. People are really hurting. Women are hurting. I had an op-ed published yesterday in the New York Daily News, which highlights the number of women that are leaving their jobs, the number of women that are leaving their workforce, how women are getting hurt when children are home, confined to distance learning. It is the moms that leave their jobs to be there with them. And so this is so important that we bring help to the American people before we break for the Christmas holiday. And now we're talking about $900 billion-plus bill that is half of the second proposal that we agreed to put forward. And so it's not all that we need by far. I don't know how tenants are going to fare on this. Tenants are backed up in their rent for 3, 4, 5, 6 months. State and local government needs additional monies. It doesn't matter how much money we put for state in this bill. If state and local governments are nearing the cliff, the fiscal cliff of their deficits, they will have to make substantial cuts in their local budgets that will impact the quality of life of millions of people. Public
Congressman,
transportation.
I want to follow up, just to cut you off for a second, on that op-ed that you wrote. And it was titled, Mothers Need a Bailout and Fast. You know, you went through and really detailed all of the ways that this current economic crisis and the pandemic has hit mothers hardest. But neither of these bills are really aimed specifically at women, right? So why do you think, is that framing to help persuade maybe some of your Senate colleagues to support this this stimulus talk?
That's correct. We should have initiatives that will translate into real gain for mothers, for women, for single moms. You know, so for example, the stimulus check, which I think is important, there should be some additional dollars for single moms or for mothers that are home. You know, adhering to distance learning. Again, I want to go back to public transportation. So important for our economy. If we're ever going to open up, we got to have a reliable public transportation system. The MTA, New York City's subway system and bus system, has a $12 billion deficit. Now, I fought for $4 billion in the CARES Act, and I fought for the inclusion of $8 billion in the HEROES Act. But if we're only going to do a $900 million, that will go down to less than $4 billion. We will not be able to get the subway system, the bus system, fully going when we decide to open up if we don't have those dollars available. So these are the kinds of challenges that we have, and unfortunately, $900 billion doesn't cut it.
This new package does include some aid to transit and state and local governments, and it seems to be aimed at just getting us to April when we can assess the effort of vaccinations. I'm wondering what else is left out that was included in the HEROES Act.
Well, certainly, this is not a total loss precisely because of what you said. We'll be able to get through April, and then we'll be able to go back to the new administration and say, wait a minute, we need additional dollars to get America back on its feet. So this will provide a temporary fix for all of this. I am concerned about the rental assistance, and I am also concerned about the level of PPP help that will bring local businesses. Take restaurants, for example. Mm-hmm. They already took a bad hit. And they may be forced to shut down again. I mean, this is not getting any better. We're looking down the barrel of a third phase of this pandemic. I don't know if many of these restaurants will be able to survive a second shutdown.
Is that what you're hearing from constituents and folks in your district?
The local restaurant owners are having a rough time as they approach, the cold months of the winter. Not many customers are going to come in. You know, they had their original PPP help early on when they were really shut down, and it was really just for preparation for the reopening. But now when they attempted to reopen with the outdoor dining and the limited 50% indoor dining that was originally put forward, they were facing tough challenges. And so now is when they need the help. And so we got to be robust in terms of another PPP program. We got to be robust for the rental assistance program. I run into people every day that don't know where they're going to get their monies to pay 6 months' worth of rent that they're backed up. That's a lot of money.
Congressman, when the debate over this relief package started, the state and local governments hardest hit by the pandemic were right here in New York and New Jersey. But now that it's red states, do you think that increases the chances that Senator Mitch McConnell will allow it to be voted on?
I hope so, but it seems he has no heart. He's really Dr. No, and he has no heart. He has no interest in helping the American people nor his constituency. Now that the pandemic is ravaging the rest of the country, I just can't figure out what planet he's living on, what galaxy he's living on, that he doesn't understand how bad it is and that the American people need immediate help. But by the way, my zip codes, the 13th Congressional District, got hit very hard during the months of, March, April, May of this year. They got disproportionately hit. I have some of the zip codes with the highest number of deaths in the country, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And communities of color, one out of 875 African-Americans has died. We see that one out of 1,200 Latinos have died. And so this is hurting communities of color in disproportionate ways because we suffer from diabetes and we suffer from high blood pressure and we suffer from asthma and other respiratory diseases. So this health disparities that have been for far too long around, they need to be finally addressed. And that's going to require investment. And that's going to require a very specific investment in our healthcare institutions, in our local community doctors that are having a rough time reopening up because they now have to pay for their own PPEs and now they have to make adjustments to their space with new ventilators and new arrangements to keep social distancing. And they have to dig into their pockets while their 90% of their patients are Medicaid patients or Medicare patients. So this is a great challenge, unprecedented maybe in American history. And McConnell is digging his head in the sand.
Congressman, another priority I think on the minds of many listeners is how we will go about distributing vaccines in anticipation of the FDA approving the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine soon. Planning is underway for that distribution, and Governor Cuomo says 170,000 doses of the Pfizer vaccine could be available to New Yorkers as early as December 15th, starting with frontline medical workers and nursing homes. But it could take a while, through the summer even, to achieve so-called herd immunity. So I'm curious, what criteria do you want the governor to use for who gets the vaccine when?
That's a very important question. For some time, my staff and I have been discussing the ethics of the vaccine distribution to ensure that rich folks don't come in and muscle in and take the vaccine before the very needy get access to it. You know, I remember with the whole testing process, how I went ahead and helped open up a testing site in the zip code with the Bronx that had one of the highest positive rates in the country. And it was a drive-in, drive-through testing site. And the first day I began to see all these very expensive cars coming into this Northwest Bronx site. And I say, something is wrong here. You know, not many of my constituencies are driving around in Mercedes and Beamers and Lexuses and the like. And I quickly realized that these folks were coming in from wealthier counties in Westchester County. And so the reason why that's happening is because we don't have the walk-ins. And most of my constituents don't drive. They take public transportation. So we had a fight to very quickly transform that testing site, not only in a drive-through testing site, but also a walk-in testing site, so that people from the Bronx will be able to walk in. I don't want that same kind of scenario happening with the distribution of the vaccine. And of course, the first recipients should be those emergency workers and those healthcare workers. And by emergency workers, I want to have a broader definition of it. What about that delivery guy that comes in from the bodega and knocks on 50, 70 doors a day? That has to open the door of a lobby. That has to touch that button in the elevator 100 times. That has to knock on your door and expose him or herself to the delivery. What about the cashier at the supermarket or the cab driver that's taking the senior to his or her appointment in the hospital? And so these are also emergency workers in addition to healthcare workers. They should come first, because if we don't protect them, the healthcare system could potentially collapse. Then you have seniors who have pre-existing conditions. They should be next. And the neighborhoods that have been hard hit should be next. We disproportionately have been hit the hardest, black and brown communities. We should be next. And so the governor always speaks about New York providing more revenue and more taxes, paying more taxes than the rest of the country, and we should get more. Well, guess what? Neighborhoods that have been hard hit also should be first online. So let's see how we address that. I think there's some of these guidelines and public policy issues should be codified. For example, what happens if somebody's caught selling the vaccine illegally? I think they should be severely sanctioned. If not, they should also be arrested and put in jail. So these are all things that I think should be codified. And my staff and I are working on ways on how we can accomplish that.
Congressman, President-elect Biden has named some key cabinet members. I'm wondering what your reaction is to the people he's named so far.
Whereas he has put, I think, very experienced folks, I would like to see his cabinet be comprised of more Latinos and African-American and women, although he's appointed many women. But I think there's a lack of African-American and Latino presence in his cabinet. And we got to see how we must engage those communities that have been traditionally disenfranchised. We will be meeting the CHC, the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, will be meeting today with the co-chairs of his transition team this afternoon in about a couple of hours. We'll be meeting with them to express that particular view. For far too many administrations, the Latino community has gotten low-tier appointments. This is the time for us to be part of the cabinet at a significant level where we can feel all part of the team that will bring about results for the American people. If we're not at the table, we'll be eating for lunch.
Congressman, I want to take a moment. I know that you just were on the House floor this morning paying tribute to the late Mayor David Dinkins, pointing out that the very high crime rate in the city started to come down under his administration. Are you concerned for his legacy?
I am concerned that there are revisionists out there that want to lie about his legacy or distort his legacy. And his legacy was one of inclusion. He always called New York City a gorgeous mosaic. You know, when the city was facing the crack epidemic, and let me tell you, in all my years in the city, and I've been living in the city, I came as a young boy from the Dominican Republic in 1964. I never saw the city take such a hit as it took during the crack epidemic. It almost went down. And what he did was he went and he got $1.8 billion to put together the community policing program, which was very effective in having foot patrol officers in every community that would know the young people in the corner, that would know the small business owner, that would know the grandmother, the parents of young people. In addition to that, he opened up the Beacon Schools, a very ambitious program to make the schools the center of the community. And I think those were very effective programs. And the community policing program began to contribute for the return of New York City and the public safety betterment of the city and the drop in crime that later on Giuliani tried to take credit for. You know, he also started the initiative to bring back Times Square. We all remember Times Square as a seedy sort of like place where no one should go. He was the one that gave a shine, brought in Walt Disney, brought in the investment necessary. And you know, also the Arthur Ashe Stadium, which was controversial. Absolutely. Because it was built on Flushing Meadow Park. Yet it produced more revenue than baseball, basketball, football for the city of New York. And finally, you know, the day he brought Mandela in was what a glorious day for New York City. Every neighborhood rejoiced and celebrated freedom for South Africa. But most importantly, we did that knowing that David Dinkins was our mayor.
In your speech, you called him your dear friend and mentor, but you also took on his dear friend, Charles Rangel, in primaries and defeated his choice to succeed him, a fellow Harlem Democrat. Did that change your relationship at all?
No. I don't know if he ever forgave me for that. But, you know, he was a gentleman, and he only gave me, when we ran into each other, love and respect. So I'll always remember him for that.
My last question, Congressman, we started the show with a look at 2021 and the next mayoral election. There are quite a few candidates already in the running. Are you backing any of the candidates so far?
Yes, I'm supporting Scott Stringer for mayor. I think he'll make a great mayor. He's originally from Washington Heights, Inwood. I know him for many years. He understands diverse communities. He's done a great job as controller and Manhattan Borough president, and I think he'll make a great mayor.
We'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Congressman Adriano Espaillat.
Thank you so much.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.